Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good to have you with us. Hour number two underway here on a Tuesday afternoon. We'll take you up till 4 o'clock. So that means two more hours to play. Lots to cover already. Or lots covered, I should say, already in hour number one. Still lots to get to, including a complete look around week two, because we can get really a chance to do much of that. But we spent the first hour on the Giants quarterback situation, the Monday night football fallout from the Lions kicking the daylights out of the Ravens defense and who needs Ben Johnson, and on top of that, the Terry McLaurin situation. So yesterday we mentioned a couple of times, and because AMAC's a Giants fan, I thought this was good banner, and because we're a Commanders large audience, Cliff Kingsbury was the top of three candidates on Joe DeLeon's list to replace Brian Daboll with the New York Giants. So I thought we'd reach out to Joe and try and get him on. He works for A to Z Sports, among with a number of outlets. Great NFL draft analyst as well. NFL analyst. Again, A to Z Sports. You can follow him at Joe DeLeon on Twitter. Former Rhode Island football long snapper. And Joe's been on with us before, but it's been a while. So we welcome Joe back onto the show. Joe, it's Chris Russell here in D.C. Thanks for doing this. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, minus the chaos that the Giants fan base and the media are undergoing with the abrupt news that Jackson Dart's going to be the starter. But other than that, doing pretty great on this Tuesday.
Yeah, you were, I don't know how long you've been banging the drum, but I saw even before this happened, of course, and listen, it became a very popular thing to do on Sunday night, but you've been on Jackson Dart for a little while. Is that correct? I mean, obviously you studied him coming out. And I thought when he came out, Joe, very talented. We all could see that. But a little inconsistent, a little rough around the edges. So I didn't know how quick he was going to be to get ready in the NFL. But then you see him in the preseason. And I remember watching him in Buffalo for the Giants. And I was like, oh, wow, not only is he mobile, but he was accurate. And he seemed to have pretty good poise for a first start in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think one thing about Dart, actually, on how I feel about him, I wasn't the biggest fan of him when I was evaluating him as a prospect. I thought that he was late a lot of times on his reads. I thought that he was a bit indecisive in a number of areas. I just didn't really see the instinct for a starting quarterback in the NFL. And the system he was playing in with Lane Kiffin, it simplified a lot of things for him. When you had to navigate, or he had to navigate off of that first read to the second one, he didn't do a great job of it. But in the preseason, and why I was a lot more bought in, and why I felt they should just start him at the beginning of the year, he was showing a lot of really amazing playmaking ability. He was incredibly decisive. It was a total 180 from his college film, and he just looked like he had total command. There was the one play that Chase Daniel identified against the Bills that went super viral, showing how he checked it at the line and then threw it to little Jordan Humphrey. He, to me, is already showing the positive signs for being a quality starter. I don't know if Jackson Dart ever gets to the top 10 starting position. His ceiling for me as a prospect was him being Kirk Cousins or what Bo Nix was last year before his slow start this year. But if he gets to that point and he's as good as Kirk Cousins, this Giants team can rally around him. But the biggest reason why I thought that it made no sense to start Russell Wilson there was no shot that this Giants team was going to the playoffs. There was none. And it was affirmed in the first 3 weeks. The game he had against the Cowboys, everyone was thinking, oh, Russ is back. Look at what Russ has. It was more so Wandell Robinson and Malik Nabers victimizing a terrible Cowboys secondary and Russ just chucking prayers to them and hoping that they caught it. But ultimately, now we're at this spot, and if Daboll wants to save his job, maybe he doesn't need to win a lot of games. He just needs Dart to be in that offensive rookie of the year conversation.
Right, no doubt about it. Joe DeLeon wrote, speaking of Brian Daboll, three Giants head coach candidates, should they consider replacing Brian Daboll now that they've made the quarterback switch, as we just talked about, to Jackson Dart? If you're Daboll, did you make this decision because you know you're going to get fired if it doesn't turn around? Or did you make this decision because, hey, Russ is – what's the nicest way I can say this? Russ is done being a consistent starter, as we, I think, all know, but also because Dart is truly ready, meaning – Like you mentioned, what you saw in college to what you saw in preseason, we know it's a big transition. Do you think Daboll is making this decision because Dart is truly ready, or because he's desperate to move off of the inconsistency of Russ?
I think it's both. I thought that it was an indicator that Dart was more ready than people thought. When they named him the backup quarterback at the start of the season, there was a lot of projection because they signed Jameis Winston to a multi-year deal because they wanted to have a known, reliable backup, and they valued Winston's leadership ability that they didn't want to just let him leave by cutting him, and they didn't want to trade him. They were adamant about it despite a lot of teams wanting to make a move and to bring in Winston. So that decision to make Dart your backup was the sign that the coaching staff thought that he was ready. And Daboll even said this yesterday. He said, we wouldn't put him in the game in those packages if we didn't think that he was ready to step on the field. And so I think that he has shown readiness. He's shown that he's ahead of what everybody's expectations were. But at the same time, as you just said there, I think that he is incredibly desperate. Part of me wonders if maybe there was some sort of restriction or some sort of parameter in place from ownership or Joe Shane that prevented him from starting Dart sooner. Because every time we heard Daboll talk about this, and he was asked every single week during the preseason, and he was asked after the Commanders game. He wasn't really asked after the Cowboys game, but he was asked a ton yesterday, when are you going to make the move to Dart? His tone made it seem like he was holding something back, and he's never been the type of guy that's been fully transparent. Part of me wonders if he wanted to do this sooner because he understood a good year from Dart makes it hard for ownership to decide to move on from him because they might be afraid of stunting Dart's development. So we'll see what happens in this remaining year. It's a really, really hard schedule. I'm holding out hope that Dart can string together a couple of really exciting performances, and I think a few should be enough for him to be one of the quarterbacks in the final names for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award.
And maybe it saves Brian Daboll's job, but that was originally one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on, besides everything else, is you wrote a column, again, A-to-Z-Sports.com, on the top three candidates to replace Brian Daboll if the Giants were to move on. And again, that's an if, not a when. And number one on that list was Cliff Kingsbury. Now, you wrote, obviously, some of the reasons why you would suggest Cliff Kingsbury is it just because Cliff's success last year reinventing himself in your eyes, or is it because of the college match, as you kind of alluded to, with potentially Jackson Dart? Like, what would you say is the number one reason why you think Cliff Kingsbury could be a good fit in New York?
Yeah, and just to partially clarify, the three names that I listed were not in a particular order. The one that I actually like the most, I really like the thought of John Gruden being the Giants' next head coach because he is so vocal about how much he loves Jackson Dart. But the reason why
he does love himself some Jackson Dart. He does. John's having a good time with those Barstool guys, you know?
Right, and he wants a job, and I think he knows that if he hypes up a quarterback, it'll get ownership's attention for the Giants. But there were two reasons why I thought that Kingsbury should be a viable name out of any of the other guys around the league that are offensive coordinators. One, I think that after this string of failures, and I believe Jordan Renan of ESPN even spoke on this on a recent show about how whoever they go with is probably going to be somebody with past head coaching experience. The last coach that they hired that was previously a head coach was Pat Shurmur. That obviously didn't work out, but they've gone the way of these up-and-coming coordinators that were rising names in coaching circles, and those haven't worked out. So I think that now you got to transition. You need to look to someone who's been a head coach who failed and has been able to evaluate those failures and turn around to become a successful coach. To me, Kingsbury, I think, has had enough time to reflect being able to step away from the pro game, and the transformation for how potent the Commanders' passing offense was in Jaden Daniels' first year really caught my attention. I understand that he doesn't have a strong record as a head coach in college and in the NFL, but to take – Jaden Daniels is extremely physically gifted, but to take the rest of that offense that's last year below-average offensive line, you have an old running back in Austin Ekeler, you've got an old tight end in Zach Ertz, you're able to really activate that unit and turn it into one of the best offenses in the NFL, that's notable to me. Now, I understand that Kingsbury's system is not anywhere similar to Lane Kiffin's, but I think a lot of the triggers for the decision-making at the quarterback position that helped Daniels play so well in his first year, I think a lot of that would translate really well for Dart. As I mentioned earlier, my thoughts on when I evaluated him as a prospect, I thought he struggled at times with decision-making. We might find, as he plays for the Giants, that he might have some issues. He might not be as steady as he was in the preseason once he faces some real competition.
Right.
Having somebody who can help bring him along by putting him in an offense that's more college-oriented, a little bit more just go, 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 might be really the thing that he needs in order for this Giants team to really explode in Dart's year two.
Yeah, when you mention go, 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 I mean, Kingsbury obviously loves to run tempo, and tempo by design, not tempo by necessity. Some of those, obviously, the RPO game and read option game and everything that they've incorporated, of course, with Jaden Daniels. Joe DeLeon with us. A to Z Sports is the where you find the column. You follow him on Twitter @X at Joe DeLeon. And he's former NFL, former college, I should say, long snapper at Rhode Island. Does a nice job covering the NFL draft and as well the NFL. Again, A to Z Sports is where you find his latest on Cliff Kingsbury, John Gruden, and Brian Flores. Let me ask you one more about Cliff. You know, I'm not there every day, but I'm savvy enough and I'm still locked in enough. I don't know. Cliff can design an offense. Sometimes he goes up and down in terms of his dedication to the run. Okay, you can pick on that. I don't know if he has the desire or the want or the love of having to deal with the media every day, especially when things go wrong. And I guess a lot of coaches are like that, but I think he rediscovered his love for coaching football here and maybe even a little bit at USC in between Arizona, because he didn't have to deal with, quite honestly, somebody who I think is very immature, in, or was at least, in Kyler Murray. I wonder how he would deal with the New York media, the pressure, the spotlight, and maybe, quite honestly, at times, I heard this about Jackson Dart, a little bit cocky, a little bit arrogant, a little bit immature. You know, I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question, because where he was in his past stops, there was not really a true spotlight on him. Texas Tech media is not going to, you know, really give him a hard time because he's a former quarterback there as well. It's just not as big of a market. And Arizona is one of the smaller markets and fan bases in the NFL. The Giants don't play around, and the New York media does not play around. I listen to WFAN every single day that I get a chance to, and they do not mess around with how they treat Daboll and his missteps and his failures as a coach so far. And I love, there's a number of media members, journalists that cover the Giants that I love and I know personally, and others that I just look up to and respect. And I think that, by the way, you have to have this trait to be successful. They are not going to give any grace to a coach if they're struggling. They will grill you. They will ask you over and over again. They will write columns about your struggles and your issues. It's not like any other market where they will be to your face negative, and they will also in their content be negative. They're not afraid to be critical. So I think it's a really good point that maybe that factors into if Kingsbury does leave at the end of the season or he leaves in the next couple of years to take another head coaching job, if he doesn't prioritize going to a market that he doesn't have to deal with as much craziness.
No doubt about it. Joe, the other candidates that you list, and I really like this one, and my producer, AMAC, who's a Giants fan, really like this one. Brian Flores is a guy who, you know, look, didn't work out in Miami. There was a lot going on there, right? And maybe he's changed some of his style. But one thing I know is he hadn't changed his defensive philosophy. He gets after it. And with that pass rush in New York, I think Flores would be a great fit there. Again, I don't know how he deals with the media and all that stuff, but I think I think that Giant defense with Burns and Dexter Lawrence and Abdul Carter and Kayvon Thibodeau could be easily number, top three with Brian Flores as the head coach. And you mentioned John Gruden, you know, who, of course, you would have to kind of, you would have to answer a lot of questions about, but eventually those questions, I think, would dim and go away. Which one of those two would you lean more heavier towards?
Yeah, I think that the lean for me would be towards Gruden if I was able to pick it in a vacuum. But as you mentioned, the complication of the ongoing lawsuit that he has might affect the Mara family deciding not to go in that direction, just because they understand the complications of the media market of how they're going to perceive that and how they're going to cover it. But I really like the idea of Flores. Flores was one that I got really excited about because you see the havoc that he's creating in Minnesota and the problems that he causes for opposing offenses, because he is just a madman when it comes to calling defenses. He will go after any opposing team with such aggressiveness. And I think knowing the strengths and the athleticism on this Giants roster, it would be completely activated. And I don't think that Flores necessarily comes in and calls plays for the Giants, because not a lot of defensive-minded head coaches do that, but he at least is going to instill that philosophy of physicality, of versatility, of just that chaotic approach. I really like both those options, and to me, I think Giants fans should be excited about any of those three if they were the man that they ended up hiring.
Joe DeLeon, A to Z Sports with us, covers the NFL draft and the NFL. His latest, again, as we've been discussing, on the Giants head coaching situation, potentially with Cliff Kingsbury, John Gruden, and Brian Flores. All right, I wanted to, just in the couple moments that we have left with you, there's so much to cover. I wanted to ask you, like, Jaden Daniels, before he got injured, was struggling a little bit, right? He just didn't seem like the same Jaden Daniels last year. Do you think NFL defenses have maybe figured him out? Do you think it was just a little bit of rust from not playing in the preseason? Do you think it was not working with Terry McLaurin? What would you just, whatever you saw through 2 weeks, and I realize he's injured now, what would you say maybe jumped out at you as, okay, this doesn't look exactly the same?
Yeah, I thought it was more so rust for his issues. And against the Giants, in watching that game and evaluating it more from the Giants' perspective, I didn't think he played bad. I just thought that the offense was out of rhythm. You had a preseason with distractions with Terry McLaurin's contract, and you've got a new guy coming in Deebo Samuel. You're trying to figure things out, and not everybody is there to do it. I think that the Commanders are going to be an offense this year that as the season progresses, they're going to hit their stride and they're going to get back to normal. And I know that dealing with Eckler and what's going on with his injury status and not having him, now that you can just turn to Kroski Merritt allows for your offense to also play a little bit more freely, that you just have one guy that you can lean on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that knowing how Cliff has activated this team and how gifted Jaden Daniels is as an athlete, he's going to be fine. Ultimately, when we have these uber-talented second-year quarterbacks after they burst onto the scene, C.J. Stroud's an easy example. I mean, even Lamar Jackson's had times in his career, similar play style to Jaden Daniels, where it felt like defenses figured him out, and then he eventually goes back to his normal level of dominance. So I think that there's an eventual path to get brought back, knowing how gifted Daniels is.
Joe, before we run out of time, got a big picture question, if you will, college football wise. I mean, we've seen so many things already this year, from the upsets in week one and some of the top 10 teams going down. Now Mike Gundy gets fired at Oklahoma State. That's not a surprise. We see Clemson in trouble, 1-3. How do you, when you look big picture at college football, right, with the NIL and all the transfer portal stuff, how hard is it to evaluate what a team and what a program is for you in your eyes when we just don't know what teams are? And maybe we don't find out until, I don't know, the end of the season or midway through a season, because it's basically like a glorified version of the NFL in terms of free agency nowadays.
Well, one thing that I always seemingly forget, and then I'm reminded by week two, is that you really don't know who the best teams are until after September.
Yeah.
You just don't. It's such an ambiguous landscape, because unlike the NFL, there's 130 teams, and there's FCS programs as well. There's players everywhere. So when player movement happens, you can do as much film work as you can during an offseason. You're going to miss guys that come out of nowhere, and you're going to also maybe not understand that one player did really well because the system was perfect for him or the supporting cast around him was right for him, and he steps in, and there could be underlying factors for these young guys that cause them to not play as well. We also don't really get as much exposure to the dynamics of coaching staffs and how NIL is affecting the relationships in locker rooms. I think that's the biggest difference that's not really talked about enough, that could always be forces in why teams struggle, especially ones that go really deep into the transfer portal or the ones that don't have as much NIL money. You have a bunch of young kids that aren't used to making a lot of money that are now in a position where they feel like, you know, they get to flex it, they get to show off what they have. It's great that they have these opportunities, but when you get to the NFL, everybody's making a lot of money. You're under the expectation, the understanding of what everybody's making and where their roles are defined. It's really complicated in college football, because you'll get a lot of times recruits get a big amount of money and then they're not even starting, they're not even playing, or they're forced onto the field because they're given a big NIL deal. There's just so many complicated factors that have made it even harder to predict. But the landscape itself is one that quickly reminds us that September is the end of September is when we know who those legit threats are.
Same probably can be said in a lot of ways in the NFL as well. Joe DeLeon's all over it. By the way, you can listen to more college football coverage on the Ruffino and Joe show. It's part of the Bleav Network that Joe DeLeon hosts, co-hosts, I should say. And of course, A2ZSports.com, which is where this Cliff Kingsbury, Giants, John Gruden, head coaching situation. I have so many other questions for you. We're going to have to get you back on, because I didn't even get to Virginia Tech and Maryland start and so on and so forth. So if we could probably do something again sometime soon. But I really appreciate you making some time for us. Great to catch up with you. I hope you're well.
Of course. Thanks as always for having me.
You
have
got
a good
it. One. That is Joe DeLeon. Again, good stuff there. So I ask this, maybe Jackson Dart saves Brian Daboll for now. I'm not convinced that's going to happen. I think Jackson Dart will come out probably throwing darts on Sunday against the Chargers. Soften up that Charger defense for the return of Jaden Daniels next week. I just don't know if it's going to last. I don't think it's going to last. Remember, I'm a glasses three-quarters empty kind of guy. And then, would Cliff Kingsbury be a good fit in New York? I have my doubts about that. We'll expand on Cliff Kingsbury as a potential head coaching candidate and as the Commanders offensive coordinator next on the Team 980.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good to have you with us right here on a Tuesday, September the 23rd, year of our Lord, 2025. All of our sports talk right here on the Team 980 is presented by our friends at Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Watch the new season of Tulsa King, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go check that out. I have not had the ability to see that yet. Football season is very, very, very difficult. But I so desperately need to watch as many non-sports television series as I can. So I'm very, very
much off season. It's sports time.
There
right
really
now.
Is no off season.
Yeah,
I mean, if you think about it.
Okay, there's a.
But there is a season where there's not as much football.
Exactly. Wait till then.
Okay.
Football.
I'm
baby.
Just saying, I want to see Dwight and how he handles things.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, very important.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So before we get back to the calls and the Mark and Largo show, again, thanks to Joe DeLeon, we got to get back on to talk some more college football and with the draft and everything. He's good. He's based in Jersey. So, I mean, he's obviously got his pulse on a lot of different things. The Giants have not fired Brian Daboll, obviously. But if things go wrong with Jackson Dart, which they very well could, tough schedule, as Joe mentioned, starting with the Chargers this Sunday. Like, it's very easy to see, I think, Jackson Dart get off to a hot start, right? Give some buzz, give some electricity, give some juice. Maybe they win a game. I don't know. They weren't that far off against Kansas City, and obviously they lost a heartbreaker in Dallas.
I think we got our butts kicked by Kansas City, I just want to say.
I mean, you definitely got beat, but I don't think you were that far off, I guess is my point. Is that wrong?
If our offense showed up, it's just hard to say that because our offense looks so putrid.
That's fair. All of that is fair. I guess I would kind of assimilate it to, like, I felt like the Commanders in Green Bay, who lost by 9, and at one point early in the fourth, they were only down by 7, that game was way, way, way different than what the score told us.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night, clearly the Kansas City Chiefs were the better team.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like they were that much better than the Giants. They were better, but I don't feel like they were that much better. But to your point, the Giants' offense was so putrid from start to finish in that game and really didn't get I mean, outside of Scadabo, right, it really just didn't get on track in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think Malik had one target up into the fourth quarter. Right. Like, that's unacceptable.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if you're not successful going to Malik, you got to get him more targets.
Yeah, more targets.
And then obviously they tried late. Didn't they have was it an interception or was it a pass breakup? I can't remember.
I think they had two deep shots where Russ looked like he closes his eyes and just throws it up for Malik Nabers. And it's like, when we say targets for Malik Nabers, we're not just saying dumb, blind targets, like just throwing it up to him. We mean, like, get him involved in the game plan and get him looks.
And that is kind of, quite honestly, at this point, Russell Wilson's, I don't want to say saving grace, but, I mean, a lot of people feel like Russell Wilson can do one thing, basically the balloon ball, long shot, deep shot, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what they were just trying to unearth there. I don't know. Either way, the bottom line is, I don't know if this saves Dable's job, right? And so if Cliff Kingsbury, who is going to, I think certainly if the Commanders offense returns to be a consistent force And I say so far or returns because, as we know, it was pretty good moving the football, but a lot of penalties and things that just weird happen that aren't necessarily the offensive coordinator's fault in week one. In week two, they had no pulse except for late in the fourth quarter. Okay, game was largely over. Give them a little bit of modicum of credit, but for three plus quarters, they had no pulse on offense, running the ball, passing the ball. Week three, everything seemed to pretty much work and click with a backup quarterback, granted, a former starter, a veteran starter, and Marcus Mariota, missing a bunch of other key guys, two new starters on the offensive line, so on and so forth. So now we're back in love with Cliff Kingsbury again. So here's the question. Through 23 games, three playoff games and 20 regular season games, Cliff Kingsbury, to me, as an offensive coordinator, as a consistent force, as a leader of this offense, if I had to letter grade him through that 23-game sequence, I would say for me, there's some inconsistencies that I don't really love. But overall, you got to give Cliff Kingsbury an A-, right? I mean, this has mostly been a juggernaut offense without juggernaut talent, if that makes sense. That's what it mostly has been. Does that make sense? I think that does. I would give Cliff Kingsbury an A- through 23 games, three playoff games, and 20 regular season games. What would you give? And do you love Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive coordinator? Do you like him? Or do you think, like some people still think, that the Cliff or whatever you want to describe it as, that Cliff Kingsbury is still not to be trusted? Where are you on that? We'll give you more and more reasons why I think an A- next after a trending alert right here, right now. Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, so indeed, the Giants are benching Russell Wilson and going to go with Jackson Dart this Sunday against the 3-0 Los Angeles Chargers at MetLife Stadium. The Chargers, by the way, are the opponent for the Commanders a week from this Sunday. Before that, the Commanders will take on the Atlanta Falcons. They might be doing so without Terry McLaurin, who's seeking a second opinion on his quad injury. Also, the Falcons, off of that 30-0 shellacking at the hands of the Carolina Panthers, have moved offensive coordinator Zach Robinson from the booth down to the sideline and fired former Redskin wide receiver coach Ike Hilliard as their wide receiver coach. Meanwhile, from Major League Baseball, MLB has approved the robot umpires for 2026 as part of the challenge system. So the 11-man competition committee approving the use of the automated ball and strike system. Home plate umpires will still call balls and strikes, but teams can challenge two calls per game and get additional appeals in extra innings, which doesn't seem like a whole lot, but clearly an introduction into the system, and then they will see more as they go along. Meanwhile, in baseball, the Nationals losing last night to the Atlanta Braves, who are red hot. They've won 9 in a row, the Braves have. The same two teams will go at it tonight, 7:15 from Truist Park in Atlanta. You can hear it on 106.7 The Fan. And one college football note, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Oklahoma State firing longtime head coach Mike Gundy. They had lost 11 out of their last 12 games. He becomes the third college football head coach, along with Brent Pry at Virginia Tech, to be fired within the last week to week and a half. And that's what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 240, 20 in front of three right here on the Team 980 on a Tuesday. Talking Cliff Kingsbury, right? Thought it would be a good time. After a 40-plus burger on Sunday, I should say, with a backup quarterback against the Vegas Raiders. Now, again, as we discussed yesterday, the playing surface was not fair, right? I don't want to necessarily go into that. But Kingsbury putting up 41 points without a defensive turnover this year. 41 points, the not very good performance in Green Bay, and then the good but choppy performance against the Giants. But they did rack up 430-plus yards in that game and did run the ball for 230 yards or whatever it was. So, Cliff Kingsbury, there is no denying that he can coordinate an offense. I don't think anybody would question that. How much do you love him? Well, that's beauty in the eye of the beholder. But let me give you some numbers, okay? It's only three games. It's only three games. But let me give you some numbers. So far, the Commanders are averaging 354 yards a game. The NFL average, 317.4. That's a plus 36.6 difference. Yards per play, 5.77. NFL average, 5.19. That's 0.58 yards above per play than the NFL average. Rushing yards per game, 157.3. NFL average, 110.1. The difference, 47.2 more in the favor of the Commanders. Rushing yards per play, 5.69. Now, listen, it helps. You get Jeremy McNichols with the 60-yard run, so on and so forth. But still, this is a team that traded, supposedly, their starting quarterback and their dog in the middle of training camp, right? And yet, here we are. 5.69, the NFL average, 4.23. The Commanders are averaging almost 1.5 yards per rushing play more than the NFL average. Think about that. Now, passing yards per game is a little bit down. The NFL average, 207.4. Passing yards per game for the Commanders, 196.7. Passing yards per play, though, is 1/10. One-tenth of a yard, 6.34 to 6.33, in favor of the Commanders. So it's right there with the league average. They haven't thrown an interception yet in three games. Sacks per pass attempt, 8.60%. The league average is 7.04%, so that's a little bit of a negative, right? They're way above the league average. First down per game, even with the league average at 19. Third down percentage, they are below the league average being 39.31%. Kingsbury and the Commanders, 37.84%. Fourth down percentage, which obviously was so good last year, is well below the league average. Well below the league average. Red zone percentage, though, is way higher than the league average. 75% for the Commanders. That's converting red zone opportunities into touchdowns. So 75% of the time. The league average is just 56.9% of the time. So that's really good. Goal to go percentage, 100% of the time. So that's anytime you get a first and goal, right? That's good. League average, 75.18% of the time. You get the point. Average possession time, 28.23. Points per game, 26.7. League average, 22.7. So a full 4 points higher than the league average. That's just this year's numbers. That's not the playoffs last year. That's not the regular season last year. Again, I don't know how anybody could not like Cliff Kingsbury as a play caller, as a coordinator, as a coach. People used the BS nonsense Cliff last year as a means to criticize him and to worry and to say, well, in Arizona, they would fall off a cliff. Well, again, as I always say, people should actually like look into the reality. Kyler Murray was largely responsible for that. Not Cliff Kingsbury. Injuries were partially responsible for that. Not Cliff Kingsbury. This is why you have to have context. Why you can't just throw out a bunch of numbers and say, listen, this tells us everything we need to know, because there's context. So I just gave you a bunch of numbers, right? And I would say, okay, most of the numbers are good. Most of the numbers are good. But I would also say, overall, the reason why I went with an A minus as opposed to an A or an A plus, and this is a big picture thing, 23 games, is because I do think there are games and there are times where Cliff Kingsbury, for whatever reason, isn't in his bag, where Cliff Kingsbury, for whatever reason, is a little stubborn, or maybe he gets away from something too quick, or maybe he hasn't figured out some of these great zone defenses, rush 4, drop 7, Green Bay a week and a half ago, Philadelphia. But yet, he figured out Philadelphia on a Sunday afternoon in late December. They turned the ball over 6 times in that game and still put up 36 points. In the NFC Championship game, sure, they turned the ball over 4 times. But it wasn't because they couldn't move the football. It wasn't because they had no clue offensively. So I think he's figured out Philadelphia for the most part. There was one game where he didn't know, or they didn't do a good job against Philadelphia. Now, Green Bay a week and a half ago? Okay. Obviously not a good job there. Every coordinator, every coach, every player is going to have a bad game. But because I'm trying to be fair, I said, all right, A minus. Maybe I could be convinced in A. What about you? All right, let's go back to Mark in Largo and get him back aboard here because his phone crapped out. And then I forgot he called back in. Mark, how are you?
Hey, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. I can hear you.
Okay, great. I think, look, wherever Cliff goes, I think he will be fine. I really do think he's really changed himself over here. I think he will be fine. I would give him an A plus. I think, Chris, you're crazy.
To give him an A minus? Look, you think I'm crazy?
No, I just think that you're a little bit too extreme. Look, he, you're right. He does know how to match up with Philadelphia. I think the Green Bay game, just like the Eagle game last year, just like you said last year, because it's a short week and because Washington, now I thought it would be different when they went to Green Bay a couple of weeks ago, because they had an easy win against New York, it wouldn't be so much of a changeover. It was different because it was different. But the Philly game, I can understand Philly being the way it was because they had a physical game with the Steelers that Sunday, and then they just had to go through it. I don't even know, when it's a short week like that, do they even practice or they just do walkthroughs? Because from what I understand, if they're just going to do walkthroughs,
just basically really walkthroughs. Just basically walkthroughs
for their opponent, right? So that's what I think. I think when he hasn't had time to scheme for the opponent, it's a problem. This is why I think they're going to do well against the Chargers, because they're going to have enough rest against the Chargers than they would against anybody else. On the contrast, on that, it does concern me when they play Seattle and when they play. Well, the Cowboys they're familiar with, but when they play Seattle.
Like Denver, even later in the year?
Denver, well, they got a week off. They got a bye for Denver. You talking about Denver?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, they're coming off the bye. Right.
They're coming off the bye. I think they'll be fine for Denver. The whole month of November, they're pretty much on the road. They're pretty much at home except for Madrid. They play in Madrid. Then they got a week off for that game. Look, I think Washington's in a good spot right now to make a run if he uses this same game plan. no matter who they have playing. I do have questions about Noah Brown. And the reason why I say that is because they need to make some. They need to do something about that. Oh, by the way, T.J. Gardner-Johnson was just released by the Texans. I don't know why you haven't brought that up.
I didn't see it, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a lot going on today. So,
He just got released about 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
If you were watching, would you go after him?
Well, I mean, listen, they signed Darnell Savage yesterday. So right now the immediate need is not there because they clearly like Darnell Savage. But can I say that they don't like C.J. Gardner? Yeah, I know. Can I
say CJ's 27?
I mean, here's the problem. C.J. Gardner is a head case. Where was he before going to Philadelphia?
World championship team.
I know, but he was somewhere else. Detroit. He signed with as a free. So he went from one team.
Oh, so he wasn't drafted by the Eagles?
No. He went from one team. Okay. Got traded to Philadelphia. Then signed with Detroit as a free agent. That didn't work out. Went back to Philadelphia, and then Philadelphia won a championship last year. Remember, he got ejected that game in Landover, and that kind of helped change some things around. And then Philadelphia traded him to Houston this offseason, and now he's gone from Houston. I mean, he's been with a lot of teams in the last couple of years.
But you know what?
Oh, it was the Saints. He was with the Saints. That's what it was.
I tell you what, he would want to stick it to the Eagles and definitely the Lions if he's playing.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
Good point. Thank you, Mark. I got to run because we're way late. Appreciate you. That's a good point. He was with the Saints originally in his career. He's always been a feisty pain in the ass. But he's probably a guy that you love if he's on your team. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, now apparently a free agent. I didn't see that. All right, time for a quick timeout. We'll come back and wrap up the 2 o'clock hour. Lots more to come on a Tuesday afternoon on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Oh, yeah, we are rolling towards 3 o'clock. Good to have you with us on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Also, ways you can listen. If you missed any part of the first 2 hours of the show, check out the show. Every day, every hour, every segment, AMAX got it all labeled, cut up for you, and easy to digest on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, including the always free Odyssey app. An hour away from Burgundy and Gold today. We were just talking about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. The Mark and Largo show brought him up. Just a couple of weeks ago, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, according to Field Yates, had $6.58 million. Of his salary converted into a signing bonus. And as Yates noted, you wouldn't do that if you were planning on cutting him. They said, clearly had legitimate plans for their for the player in their secondary. They traded for him. And now they cut him after an 0-3 start. So I don't know what that exactly means, but here's the deal. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was originally with New Orleans. He wore out his welcome there. Went to Philadelphia. Played well. I think they got to the Super Bowl that year. Went to Detroit as a free agent. It didn't work out there. Went back to Philadelphia, I think, after he was released. It worked out very well. Won a Super Bowl there. And then they traded him in the offseason to Houston. And now he's gone from Houston. So if you count Philadelphia twice, he's been on 5 different rosters in the last, 3 years? I don't know if you want to bring that into your building that you just, say as a brotherhood and this, that, and the other thing, and the culture is so great. I'm not sure if that's the right fit. Here's one thing I know. C.J. Gardner-Johnson can be a very productive player. But again, you just signed Darnell Savage yesterday. It would seem to me like that's kind of the department of redundancy department. But I don't know. If you guys think that might be a good idea, please, I'd love to hear from you. 301-230-0980. Also, grading Cliff Kingsbury through 23 games as the OC. I got him as an A-. What do you have him as? And Terry McLaurin seeking a second opinion. We'll have more on that coming up as he's dealing with a quad injury. And it's potentially might not be good. And AMAC's Giants have made another roster move. Does AMAC know about this? Oh, I'm going to have to give him the details. I don't know if I like this. I'm going to have to give him the details. Next on the Team 980. Again, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Stay with us, baby.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.